It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. In rock and roll history, there are many oft-told touchstone moments. Most of them involve controversy. Elvis Presley shot from the waist up on the Ed Sullivan Show, where he was carefully framed to exclude his hips. The gates coming down at Woodstock. The deadly crowd control at the Rolling Stones concert at Altamont. And, of course, there is the Newport Folk Festival when Bob Dylan went electric. July 25th marks the 50th anniversary of the day when the man who some claimed then and now was the voice of a generation plugged in and shocked many of his fans. Musicologist Elijah Wald joins us to talk about this moment in rock and roll and cultural history. He examines what he calls the night that split the 60s in his book, Dylan Goes Electric. Elijah Wald, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So is this one of those moments in music history that's grown in legend and our cultural memory in a way that there's an impression of the event that's not actually factual?
In some ways, yeah. In some ways, though, I have to say, you know, factual is hard to say. This is like all eyewitness things, you know. There were 17,000 people there, and everyone I talked to tells the story slightly differently, and it's funny now that it's surfacing on Facebook. I just saw somebody posting yesterday saying he tells all these different ways, but clearly the only way to really know what was happening was to have been there because what I saw was different. And yeah, that's going to be the experience for everybody. The myth was formed almost instantly. I mean, the story that Dylan walked on stage with an electric guitar and the audience at Newport flipped out and started booing him, that was being reported already in the newspapers the next day.
One of the things that maybe gets overlooked is during that time period, there was kind of a partisan press when it came to folk music. So some people would have more of an agenda to push. Was that the case with the stories that came out of Newport?
You know, I don't really think so, because there was a partisan press. I mean, there was Sing Out magazine, there was Broadside magazine, but I'm talking about things like the Providence Journal and the New York Times and the Boston Globe and Billboard magazine. And they really were covering it as part of the entertainment business. And the big story really kind of was that Dylan was becoming bigger than the folk scene and that the folk scene was fading. I mean, the way the story was being told, for example, in Billboard, was very much Dylan's fans seem to be unprepared for this moment, though they are radical in everything else. I mean, the idea was sort of that, you know, they were the left and were being left behind by, I suppose, rock and roll, commercial culture, the pop scene.
How out of left field did this come for the audience, for the people at Newport? Dylan did play his folkier songs in a folkier arrangement at the extended festival that year, just not in that set. So how thought out was his decision to go electric on the big Newport stage?
In a lot of ways, it wasn't far out at all. Dylan had made his first electric record back in 1962, and by the summer of 1965, Bringing It All Back Home was out, Subterranean Homesick Blues had been on the radio, Like a Rolling Stone was on the charts that weekend at Newport. And you're right, I mean, when he played an afternoon set, he was just playing his acoustic guitar. But if you listen to the tape, what the audience is yelling for is Like a Rolling Stone. So clearly people knew he was doing that. But still what happened that night, it felt strange, I think, to a lot of people for a whole bunch of different reasons. One of them was simply, it's very hard to remember, there had never been a rock festival. No one had ever sat out in a field with 16 or 17,000 people and heard a full-scale rock band at full volume. So it was simply the loudest thing most people on that field had ever heard in their lives. So that's part of it. Part of it is that everybody at Newport felt like they knew Dylan and he was kind of theirs and one of them. I mean, his iconic moment, the moment that everybody had first heard him outside of the coffee houses of Greenwich Village, was at the Newport Folk Festival 2 years earlier, standing on stage, arm in arm with Pete Seeger, Joan Baez, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and the Freedom Singers, who were a group of four singers coming up from Georgia, from the civil rights movement, singing Blowing in the Wind and We Shall Overcome. And that was who Dylan was. And he also had always just sort of been a fun, perky guy on stage who chatted with the audience and joked back and forth. very different Dylan from the Dylan we've known ever since that night, who really appeared for the first time that night. The Dylan who walks on stage and doesn't say a word to the audience and is just sort of this blank presence interacting with his band and singing his song.
We're talking with Elijah Wald about Bob Dylan's performance at the 1965 Newport Folk Festival, known popularly as When Dylan Went Electric. That's the title of Elijah Wald's book about that show, Dylan Goes Electric. So you mentioned his persona. It wasn't just the sound, which you said the audience was unprepared for. This was very loud compared to every other act that was up there playing acoustic instruments on that stage at the festival. But other things changed, too. Dylan did change as a performer, and his persona, was it standoffish when he came out to play loud? What was going on there that the crowd maybe was unsettled by?
It felt to a lot of people as standoffish. It also felt to a lot of people as simply unprofessional. I mean, certainly this is what the musicians in the crowd say to me. I haven't heard any non-musicians say this. But he had only rehearsed with that band. He had just pulled it together. There was no plan. They pulled it together the night before. They rehearsed for a couple of hours. And they went on stage with three songs prepared. And there was a lot of time in between sort of tuning and adjusting. And, you know, neither they nor the sound crew had ever dealt with quite this situation before. But, yeah, a lot of people felt like, I mean, the simplest way to put it, and Jim Rooney, who became a producer but wrote an article for Sing Out about it, was, you know, basically people had come expecting Bob Dylan they knew, and instead of joining arms and singing Blowing in the Wind, he was backed by a loud electric band shouting, "How does it feel to be on your own?" And to a lot of people, that just felt like rejection.
There's a speculation that Dylan went electric because he wanted to blow up his persona as the voice of a generation. You know, we see him get asked all those questions in the D.A. Pennebaker film. He's like, "Why are you asking me this?"
Yeah.
Was it as much for him about wanting to challenge himself and to branch out musically, or was it an insular thing? I'm going to play loud, and I'm going to change things up, and I'm not going to be the voice of a generation.
I'm sure it was part of both of those things. And also, you know, simply, I think, wanting to excite himself. I mean, he said in several interviews that he was just getting bored just standing up there by himself strumming guitar, and he wanted something more visceral. He wanted the emotion. He wanted the energy. Something else that I should mention, because it often gets left out of the story, is I said, you know, that all those people that afternoon had been yelling for Like a Rolling Stone. And the fact is, there were a lot of people at that festival, who knows how many, but probably, you know, 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000 of the 16,000 people there had come to hear Bob Dylan. I mean, he was, for a lot of people, the star, and for quite a few people, really the only reason they were there that day. And they had been jamming the festival grounds, and they had not necessarily been particularly interested in anything else that was happening. And for a lot of people who were regulars at Newport, it sort of felt like the Dylan thing was turning their world into this corner of the commercial pop scene, and it was getting overrun by frat boys drinking beer. And so there was already a lot of ill feeling. And then he came on stage, and he played three songs, and he left. And all those people who had come just to see him completely freaked out. And, I mean, that's when you really hear the booing on the tape. I mean, you don't actually hear booing. You hear a couple of yells during the electric set. But it's when he left the stage that people simply went nuts.
And this was 1965. This was dead center in the middle of the 60s.
Exactly.
By this time, Beatlemania had hit the U.S., and music, youth music, as it was called at the time, was changing. And, you know, the Beatles at that time weren't singing political songs. For a lot of people, what Bob Dylan represented was an activist style of music that seemed more frivolous with things like the Beatles moving in.
Absolutely. No, what? That's absolutely right. And, in fact, when I call the book The Night That Split the 60s in my subtitle, it's more than just the music, because the other thing is, you know, everything that we normally think of when we say the words the 60s, you know, rock and roll, the Vietnam War, the hippies, the long hair, the drug, all of that is starting in 1965 and completely is not what the 60s were before. I mean, it was so odd to me. I grew up late. I was born in 1959, so I came to this story backwards. And looking at the film of Martin Luther King's March on Washington, the thing that completely blew my mind is here it's a protest march. This is in 1963, and they're all wearing suits and ties. And that's what the first half of the 60s was like. The politics was the civil rights movement, and the idea was reaching across generations, young and old, together, black and white together, reaching out to the good people all over America. And that was falling apart by the summer of 1965. The civil rights movement had splintered. The new word was black power. The white people were being kicked out of SNCC, which was what had organized the Freedom Summer and the Freedom Ride. And the same weekend that Dylan went electric at Newport was the weekend that Lyndon Johnson doubled the draft and fully committed the United States to victory in Vietnam. So there were a lot of reasons people were already feeling upset, and I think that that set became a touch point for a lot of people for exactly what you were saying, for that changeover, where the Beatles, you know, before the folk scene, people could sort of feel like, we like the serious music and the Beatles are for the screaming teenagers. And after that moment, it was a new world, and rock really became the voice, not just of screaming teenagers, but of intelligent young people and committed people and everybody under 30, and you didn't trust anybody over 30.
Well, there were some people from the generation over 30 that Newport and the Folk Festival was all about. I mean, folk music is supposedly this music that's not played by big stars. It's played by people. And the effort to ingrain progressive values and social justice values in folk music was part of that movement that you would have the previous years at the Folk Festival and that year at Newport. So how did the organizers of that festival and that movement, like Pete Seeger, react to Dylan's electric set?
It was a little bit mixed, but certainly Pete Seeger was very, very upset. And, you know, he felt like his dream was falling apart. He felt like here was this festival and this style of music that it's exactly what you said. I mean, the idea was this was music that regular people played. And even if they were stars like the Kingston Trio, I mean, the Kingston Trio inspired all these other kids to pick up guitars and sing like the Kingston Trio. And everybody could do that, you know? It was something you could share. And that, for Pete, was very much symbolic of bringing people together to change the world. And as you said earlier, Bob Dylan originally was sort of made part of that and made, in fact, the spokesman of that. And he was profoundly uncomfortable with the idea of being a leader or the voice of a generation or part of a movement. And he was breaking with that, and he was breaking with it very loudly in a way that felt a lot like rejection to a lot of people. And it felt very destructive, just the sheer volume of it. And what you said also about, you know, the Beatles had arrived, and a lot of people on the folk scene already felt threatened by that.
Elijah Wald is the author of Dylan Goes Electric, Newport, Seeger, Dylan, and the Night That Split the 60s. He's been talking to us about that night, which was on July 25th of 1965, 50 years ago. Elijah, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.